A link to instructions, which includes the listening over the web and submitting written comments, is available through WBAI's main webpage. And if you miss an LSB meeting, you can listen afterwards by going to pacifica.org.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion coming up.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
To the rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. This week, we're going to talk about the extreme weather throughout North America, especially in Texas. We're going to talk plenty about Texas, but let's not lose sight of the fact that extreme weather is global. 2021 is not starting out well from a temperature standpoint.
No, it's not, Matt. The month of January saw a massive heat wave in Australia. The bushfire in Adelaide Hills was only brought under control when it rained. While that bushfire lasted, smoke was so thick it lowered driving visibility. Now, we might not think of car crash victims as climate casualties, but they were in this case. Mm-hmm. The cities of Melbourne and Sydney both recorded temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius. And that's around 105 degrees Fahrenheit, which is super hot. Mm-hmm. People were taking to the water to cool off, you know, pools, rivers, beaches. Drownings are up sharply in Victoria State during this heat wave, another type of climate casualty that we are underappreciating, as our cases of near drownings, where those who survived were rushed to the hospital after ingesting large amounts of salt water. The very same day they were waiting for rain in Adelaide Hills, Australia, they were getting too much of it in Beira, Mozambique, population about 500,000. Almost the entire city flooded from a cyclone. Electricity went out and with it phone service. And the flooding kept right on going with vast areas of inland underwater. The photos show hundreds and hundreds of yards where only the rooftops of houses are visible because the rest of the structure is submerged. Farmers will lose the entire year's crop and with it their livelihoods. At least four people died. And by the way, just in case we forgot about it, just 2 years ago, the same country, Mozambique, was hit with both Cyclone Idai and Cyclone Kenneth. They came within 6 weeks of each other. And the two storms killed over 1,000 people and destroyed over 2 million acres of crops. Now, we could go on, but it's enough to demonstrate that the climate crisis is full on in the global south. And it is getting increasingly worse for millions of people around the globe.
As average global temperatures rise, scientists talk about tipping points. Tipping points are thresholds after which we cannot go back to the way things were before. Tipping points can be global or local. A global one would be melting the Greenland ice sheet. That's a tipping point that will change the shape of the oceans and change coastlines all around the world. A more local example of a tipping point happened last month. And in addition to being important climate news in itself, it might make the idea of a tipping point easy to understand. The glaciers are melting in the Himalayas, and when that melting reaches a certain point, huge pieces can break off. That's an irreversible tipping point, melting just enough that pieces break off and fall away, and those pieces are not coming back. That glacier is not getting put back together. Well, that happened in February 2021 in northern India, in a place called Uttarakhand. Glaciers are really, really big. And when this piece of glacier fell smack into a river, the water surge was so huge it burst through a dam, wrecking the dam and flooding an entire valley. The Indian government had to evacuate several villages. There was a dramatic rescue of almost 50 workers who got trapped in tunnels by the avalanche of water. One observer said it was like something out of a Bollywood movie with crazy visual effects, this massive surge of water that came so fast the workers at the dam could not even sound the alarm. As of the time of the BBC article I saw, more than 125 people were missing and feared dead. And then there's Texas. We're going to suggest that the past couple of weeks in Texas are a preview of what's going to happen again and again as the climate crisis worsens. Now, we're recording this on February 28th, 2021, and starting about 2 weeks ago, a blast of Arctic air mass similar to a polar vortex just demolished daily life in Texas. Everyone who reads news has heard all about the massive power outages. Texas got the worst of it and got the biggest headlines, but this polar vortex-like weather event had a huge geographic reach. According to the BBC, in Oregon, nearly 250,000 people and businesses were without power at one point. The governor of Illinois issued a state of emergency for his state after deep snow blanketed Illinois. Power disruptions and transportation disruptions affected life in Mississippi, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and much, much more. So the bitter cold snap didn't even stop at the United States border. Like some sort of reverse climate refugee, it plunged southward into Mexico. Here's a quote from BBC coverage. Quote, "The freezing storm has even reached northern and central parts of Mexico, where millions of people have experienced a second day of intermittent power cuts. Mexico's electricity operator has introduced rotating blackouts in at least 12 states, including around the capital, Mexico City," unquote. So in Mexico, this was huge too. Millions saw power cuts, but the electrical operator there rotated them, so they avoided the collapse that Texas saw. So while huge numbers of Texans had to try to survive for days without power, Mexicans had to survive hours without power. It looks like Mexico handled this better than Texas did. So why is that? Just what happened and why did Texas get the worst of things with power outages lasting for days, leaving people without any heating, just as temperatures plummeted way below freezing and in some places down to 0 degrees Fahrenheit? We still don't know exactly how many died, but it was certainly more than just one or two. It's not just electricity and gas that disappeared. Running water disappeared because pipes froze. And after pipes froze, pipes broke and then homes flooded. This isn't the kind of flood that creeps up from the basement like I occasionally saw growing up in the Midwest. The pipes are all through the house, and if they freeze and then they burst just as they're thawing, sprays of icy cold water are bursting through the walls. These collapse ceilings, they warp floorboards, soak carpets, destroy computers and other equipment. In a bad case, it can wipe out the whole family's property. Meanwhile, the pipes didn't just freeze in homes. Hospitals lost their running water too. From the New York Times on February 22nd, hospital employees were reporting that they could not flush toilets and could not wash their hands. All of this is happening while they're getting a wave of patients. And some of those are COVID positive patients. There were even hospitals, according to the Times, that were using bottled water for chemotherapy treatments. Hospitals using bottled water for chemotherapy.
That's insane.
For some people, how long that bottled water supply lasts becomes a matter of life and death. Dialysis, for instance, requires water, and people on dialysis require that dialysis to survive. If dialysis is discontinued for more than a short time, they will die. So Texas descended overnight into almost pre-modern, pre-industrial conditions. But it's a weird version because there's all this high-tech equipment sitting there, but they just can't use it normally. Cars that people can't drive because roads are snowed in or the gas supply is limited. The cars are there, but we can't use them. High-end medical equipment in the hospitals that work wonders with the flip of a switch, but they can't flip the switch. So the CT scanning machines just sitting there because we can't use them. Computers or even supercomputer servers that are suddenly no better than big paperweights just sitting there because we can't use them. And even on the simple side, soap. Maybe you have a bar of soap or a bottle of shampoo, but they don't do you much good without water. Flour and yeast don't bake bread without water. All those things from the low-end flour and soap to the high-end digital MRI machines in hospitals, they all work again once the power is restored. But we glimpsed a horrid situation. A future possibility where suddenly everything we rely on just doesn't work. So overnight, Texas went from fully post-industrial, digitized 21st century society to scavenging amid the snow for dead dry wood to burn so they could melt and boil water and try to cook a little food. Could this happen again? You bet it could. Texas is like the canary in the coal mine, the one who falls victim to toxic air first. This is very much along the lines of what environmental activists have been warning about for years now. And we're going to keep on warning about it. This warning. Warming. We're going to keep on warning about the warming that creates these kinds of extreme weather patterns. Yes, this is going to happen again.
And again, okay, we still haven't said enough about why Texas, and we still haven't said enough about why it's going to happen again. And there are other social dynamics, maybe even deeper ones, that are in play here. Let's take a look at each of these. First, more on why Texas in particular was so badly off. It wasn't because they have wind energy there. Houston is the oil capital of the world, but the state of Texas actually has a fair amount of wind energy and some solar. And the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, at first on Fox News, blamed renewables, right? Saying this is what happens when you have renewable energy sources. They crap out on you when there's a storm, and that's why we have massive power outages. Now, of course, that's a lie. And Governor Abbott walked it back. But before he walked it back, those comments went all over social media. So now there are tens of millions of people in the United States and abroad who heard that renewables cause power outages. Some of them might stop and think that most storms don't result in power outages on this scale. So it's probably not as simple as that. Some of them might have even heard this information that was widely reported after Abbott's comments, right? The storm did knock out wind power, but the storm knocked out gas power too. In fact, it knocked out at least twice as much power from non-wind sources as it did from wind sources. And there was no failure of renewable energy sources per se here, right? It was power failure across the board. De-icing equipment is routine on wind turbines in colder climates, and wind turbines work in cold weather if they're properly equipped. Texas did not properly equip its turbines, so the problem isn't the turbines. It's the turbines that aren't equipped for the weather. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't done the cost comparison study, but I would bet you that the overall cost of the power outages is many times more than it would have cost to properly equip the wind turbines in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the answer to why Texas was so badly off, or much worse than places like Kansas and Mexico City who faced the same storm, is not wind turbines. Why did power fail on such a massive scale across the board? Why were there no reserves to tap? Why was there nothing and nobody to come to the rescue in a reasonable amount of time? Well, back in the 90s, under Governor George W. Bush, you remember him, right? Mm-hmm. He regulated its electrical grid, and it cut off from the rest of the country. That was not just a Republican Party policy. Both Democrats and Republicans in Texas at the same time supported the separated electrical grid. But this wasn't necessarily the will of the people. Extinction Rebellion favors devolved forms of deliberative democracy as a way of determining the will of the people. You know, citizens' assemblies are something Extinction Rebellion wants to do. And we have an episode in the works on what we might mean by that. Now, Texas back in the 90s did a deliberative democracy procedure on its electrical grid, where a central question was, should we pay more for renewable energy sources? Now, according to a report on this process by the National Civic League, across 8 polls, the percentage of those willing to pay extra for wind or solar power at the beginning of the deliberative process was 52%, already a majority. And at the end of the deliberative process, it was 84%. This was done in rural Texas. 84% of rural Texans under George Bush wanted to pay more for wind energy. But instead of building up renewables in anything resembling a planned fashion, Texas authorities went for full-on deregulation. What's more, they separated their electrical grid from the rest of the country's. All right. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. And this week's topic is climate change is messing with Texas.
So not the fault of the wind turbines per se. Texas separates its electrical grid from the rest of the country's. Other states don't do this. And so in extreme weather events, they can import power from other states. Texas can't, because they cut their electrical grid off. Here are 3 interesting quotations from the New York Times. Interesting quotation number 1, quote, "The border city of El Paso survived the freeze much better than Dallas or Houston because it was not part of the Texas grid, but connected to the much larger grid covering many Western states," unquote. Interesting quotation number 2, quote, "One example of how Texas has gone it alone is its refusal to enforce a reserve margin of extra power available above expected demand, unlike all other power systems around North America," unquote. A reserve margin of extra energy. Everywhere in North America has it, except Texas. This is the only state anywhere in the United States, Mexico, or Canada that doesn't have this required margin of reserve power. So their power grid is weaker than everybody else's. Just for the record, the reserve margin of energy can come from renewable sources. Interesting quotation number 3 of 3. Quote, after a heavy snowstorm in February 2011 caused statewide rolling blackouts and left millions of Texans in the dark, federal authorities warned the state that its power infrastructure had inadequate winterization protection. But 10 years later, pipelines remained inadequately insulated, and heaters that might have kept instruments from freezing were never installed. End quote. So they knew this was coming. This happened, a milder version, back in 2011, and they knew that a bad storm was going to knock out electricity and running water because they were told so in a federal report, and they didn't prepare for it. They here refers to Texas utility executives and governmental officials. Ordinary Texans are not at fault, but those public officials and utility executives whose job it is to do the planning that prevents catastrophic failures of public services did not do their jobs. Those are the people who are responsible for this situation. It's people who are responsible for this situation. They had the means of preventing power outages and water shortages amid nasty weather, and they had abundant warning that it was a serious problem in plenty of time to do something about it, and they didn't. The residents of Texas didn't suffer just from the storm. It wasn't just the storm. It was their own incompetent and uncaring public officials, in effect, doing this to them. Now, speaking of uncaring public officials, there are some deep social dynamics that this storm has exposed, or rather re-exposed. Let's talk about walking in the snow while black.
Hey, man. You trying to get home? Are you trying to get home?
18-year-old Rodney Reese was stopped by Plano police officers while walking home from work at Walmart during the Texas freeze last Tuesday night. Police say someone called, concerned, that a black male wearing a short-sleeved shirt was stumbling along the icy conditions. It was a welfare check.
So let's talk about this story for a minute. Rodney Reese is in Plano, Texas, walking home from work. This is all captured on video, by the way. It's nighttime. There's snow and ice everywhere. And as you heard in the clip, he's wearing a short sleeve shirt. So clearly, he is not dressed for the snow and ice, but someone who lives in Plano, Texas is unlikely to have in his closet the kind of winter coat you would wear in, say, Minnesota, for example. He most certainly would not have anything in his closet to protect him from the Arctic freeze that paralyzed Texas. So the police roll up on him, right? And what was supposed to have been a welfare check on their part quickly devolved into a criminal check.
Reese lives with his mom just a few blocks away, right down the street from where he works. He repeatedly told officers he was fine.
Sir, look, we just want to talk to you.
Oh, all right? Good. I'm on the way home. I'm straight.
Okay. Okay, but you're walking in the middle of the road.
All right. I understand it. Okay. I do this every night, literally. I'm straight.
Okay. You ain't cold or nothing?
No.
With that t-shirt on?
Officers continued to follow him, however, for 2 minutes and 17 seconds.
We're doing an investigation.
I don't care. I'm going home.
You are officially detained.
The officers follow Rodney. They harass him. Even though he tells the officers that he's okay, they detain him and then they arrest him.
No.
Yes. Okay. Yes, you want.
Whoa. Before handcuffs were placed around his wrist.
Just relax.
Just relax, all right?
Just relax.
We're just trying to talk
but
to you.
I got an ankle problem. Please get off. Y'all not going.
Stop.
No. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say.
Yeah, you didn't stop. Put your hands behind your back now.
Stop.
You are not free to go.
Why?
The next thing you do is going to be get a charge right now.
No way.
Because you're pushing on an officer.
I'm not pushing. How am I pushing on?
Reese was arrested for walking in the street. The official charge, pedestrian in the roadway. The high school student spent the night in jail.
As you heard, Rodney Reese was charged with being a pedestrian in the roadway. And mind you, his walking in the street was entirely reasonable because the sidewalks were covered in snow and ice. Those of us who are from the cold weather know that sometimes you have to walk in the streets when there's snow and ice all over the ground, right? So you can see this clearly in the video of this encounter.
Now, and it is clear, Elise. I mean, there's no ambiguity, like there's no hyperbole here. The charge is being a pedestrian in the roadway. That's what he was charged. That was his criminal charge.
It's amazing that there's even a charge for that. Anyway, these bogus charges were later dropped. Nevertheless, you know, Rodney spent the night in jail, a night in jail for walking in the roadway. Let that sink in for a minute. So it's important to talk about this story in terms of our climate crisis. Now, why is that the case? Because Rodney had this encounter with the police in part because of the climate crisis. Yeah, we could argue that regardless of the weather, he might, you know, well have been stopped by the police anyway, since he was an African-American male walking home at night. You know, we know that story only too well. But for the police who arrested him, and perhaps even for the person who reported Rodney, the climate disaster in Texas actually served as a catalyst for their heightened scrutiny, suspicion, and harassment of this Black male. To put it plainly, for these officers, this young Black male walking at night and wearing a short sleeve shirt in the midst of an Arctic freeze had to be up to something criminal. He had to be dangerous, if not to himself and certainly to the community, because the climate conditions made the innocence of his walk home from work absolutely unbelievable. Aren't you cold? Was a question the officer asked, not as an expression of concern. If you really listen to it, it sounded more like an accusation, right?
Yeah.
Not once do you hear either of the police officers say, "Hey, son, you know, it's cold outside. Would you like a ride home?" Not one of them asked that, not once. The story really forces us to consider, I think, how the policing of Black and brown people will unfold as our climate catastrophe deepens. The officer's harassment of Rodney, in my mind, suggests that for vulnerable communities, climate disasters, and our global climate crisis writ large, will serve as the occasion by which the state will subject these communities to even more repression. Rather than see them as more vulnerable when disasters strike, the state instead sees Black and brown people as more suspect and more dangerous when disasters strike. It seems to me that to the state, the more vulnerable these communities become, well, you know, the more repression they deserve. We've seen this logic played out over and over again during disasters, with Hurricane Katrina being the prime example. I think we can all remember that. Mm-hmm. And it got played out again at Rodney's expense. The police, after all, didn't see Rodney as having been made more vulnerable because of the climate disaster Texas suffered. He's walking around without a coat, no long sleeve shirt to protect him against the chill. Instead, they saw him as a threat.
So Rodney gets locked up without conventional criminal charge, without a charge of endangering anybody or any property. Rodney gets locked up for walking in the street. Rodney is an essential worker who is working in the midst of two crises, the COVID pandemic and the Arctic freeze, that are having a devastating, disproportionate impact on Black and brown communities. As a young Walmart employee of high school age, we can safely assume Rodney is a low-wage worker, a worker without union protections, and likely a worker with little health care coverage. Working at Walmart, he works for a company started by the Walton family, who, despite funding some conservation work, have used their family foundation to fund climate-denying advocacy groups like Americans for Prosperity and ALEC, which stands for the American Legislative Exchange Council. Look up the work of these organizations, which we may have occasion to examine in more detail in future shows, and you will see that the Waltons who fund them are, in effect, climate-denying, anti-union, anti-regulation oligarchs. Rodney works for a family of oligarchs who have been and continue to be deeply invested in keeping Black and brown communities economically, socially, and politically vulnerable.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney talking about the recent weather crisis in Texas.
After all, the Waltons, founders of Walmart and ultimate employers of Rodney, choose not to pay their employees living wages and choose not to provide comprehensive health care coverage. They contribute heavily to politicians and organizations who want to disenfranchise communities of color. On a certain systems level, in the 21st century United States, all these social dynamics are linked. Crises don't reduce repression. They increase repression. As Elise said above, it's almost as though crises make Black and brown communities and the individuals within them seem more suspicious or more threatening or somehow more in need of being repressed or over-policed or mass incarcerated. Rodney is a single case. And no, he wasn't murdered at the hands of police, and he did have his charges dropped. So he lives to trudge home from his Walmart job another day. But he becomes, in a way, a figure of the working class of broader American society, in which Black and Brown are treated far more harshly than whites. But some of the same systematic disadvantages are shared across all of us who must work to survive. Rodney was jailed for going home from his low-wage job, where his labor is used to enrich a family who pays for the deregulation of the electrical grid and the deregulation of pollution that created the atmospheric crisis that made the storm and knocked out the power in his home area and left him without a coat, trudging home in the snow. And those police officers, agents of the state, instead of lending a hand, arrested him and put him in jail. This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
The next meeting of WBAI's local station board will be Wednesday, March 10th at 7 p.m. With this spring season, the LSB looks at how WBAI, which has been navigating the operation and economic challenges posed by COVID, will navigate into the future. There will be an opportunity for public comment. That's the meeting of the WBAI local station board Wednesday, March 10th at 7 p.m. The meeting, held through the Zoom, can be accessed by calling 929-205-6099 and entering the meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's 929-205-6099 and entering the meeting ID 922-457-2995. The telephone number to call is 929-205-6099. The meeting ID is 922-457-2995. A link to instructions, which includes the listening over the web and submitting written comments, is available through WBAI's main webpage. And if you miss an LSB meeting, you can listen afterwards by going to pacifica.org.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion
Radio. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty.
You're tuned to listener sponsored WBAI New York, and this is Today in Women's History, celebrating Women's History Month. On this day, March 2nd in 1903, the Martha Washington Hotel opened in New York City. It was the first hotel exclusively for women. And today, back in 1955, 15-year-old Black teen Claudette Colvin was arrested for refusing to give her seat to a white woman on a public bus in Montgomery, Alabama. This was 9 months before Rosa Parks did the same thing.
One of the questions asked, why didn't you get up when the bus driver asked you and the policeman? I said I could not move because history had me glued to the seat. And they say, how is that? I say, because it felt like soldier on the truth, hands were pushing me down on one shoulder, and Harriet Tubman hands were pushing me down on another shoulder, and I could not move. And I yell out, it's my constitutional rights.
Claudette Colvin speaking on Democracy Now! This has been Today, March 2nd in Women's History on listener sponsored WBAI New York.
Oh! Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Big bad wolf.
Peers and Beautiful People. I'm Johanna Fernandez, host of WBAI's morning show, A New Day. One of our listeners donated in the name of Little Red Riding Hood recently. That's because here at WBAI, the wolf is nipping at our heels. We are truly listener-sponsored non-commercial radio. We are depending on you to keep the wolf at bay and the station operating. So here's the thing. We'd love to have you donate in the name of Red Riding Hood. That's the Little Red Riding Hood plan for $25. And you'll get a full year's membership in the 60-year experiment in community radio. You know the drill. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602.